Welcome to the Captain Paul Watson Foundation podcast. I'm your host, Charlie, and I'm joined today with Rob Reed. Rob, how are you today?
I'm good, thank you, Charlie. How are you?
Good. Well, it's nice to talk to you again. I know we just had our conversation about Operation Ice Storm, and so now we're going to switch gears a little bit and talk about the Faroe Islands and Operation Bloody Fjords. So, Rob, I wanted to give our audience, for those listeners that are sort of just tuning in and haven't heard any of our previous conversations, could you describe what the Grindadrap is for those that don't know?
The Grindadrap is a is a unique hunt in the modern world, if you like. So in the Faroe Islands, so just 230 nautical miles north of Scotland, where I live, the Faroe Islanders have 26 designated killing bays around their small islands. That's islands with only a population of just over 50,000 people. So these 26 killing bays, they have this, what they portray as a traditional sort of cultural hunt. Technically, it's a drive hunt of cetaceans, mainly pilot whales, longfin pilot whales, but also several other dolphin species. Pilot whales also being dolphins, of course, second largest dolphin after orcas. And whenever a pod is spotted, and it could be by, you know, somebody just driving down the coastal roads, most of the roads are coastal roads, it could be somebody out on a boat, could be somebody on a helicopter or on a ferry, just phones in saying a pod has been spotted. That goes to the local grind foreman in any one of the whaling districts around the islands, and he makes a decision about whether there should be a hunt or not. And invariably, they authorize a hunt every time, as long as the sea conditions are right and the pod is basically reachable by small boats. They then send out a message, and there's like calls out even on the ferries, radio stations, for people to join in the hunt, and people from that local area and people all around the island sort of rush to convene to take part in the hunt. Locals will go out in their boats, like, and we're talking about, you know, it could be small fishing boats, but the vast majority of them are, you know, pleasure boats, sports fishing boats. Sometimes they even use jet skis. They'll go out, they'll basically go round the pod in the same way that the Taiji fishermen, dolphin hunters do in Japan. They'll go around the back and using a wall of sound, although this time from all their massed engines and everything else, and sometimes by banging on their hulls as well, they'll drive the pod into one of the killing bays where there'll be, well, sometimes 50 to 100, maybe even 200 young fairies, men typically, waiting to kill them by hand on the beach. So this is a very indiscriminate hunt. It's a hunt that can actually happen any time of the year. Very poorly reported in a lot of the press, actually, which seems to make out it's like an annual event, almost makes it sound like it happens just once. But some years you can get more than 20 grins. Some years it's much less. But, you know, if you look at the last 40 years of statistics, you know, over 1,100 dolphins are killed a year in the Faroe Islands. The statistics are horrifying. Primarily longfin pilot whales. The second species to be killed is Atlantic white-sided dolphins. The dolphin hunt, the Atlantic white-sided dolphin hunt, is something that the fairies always tried in the past to kind of suppress any news about, because it had that magic word dolphin. And they knew that a foreign press and media would always latch onto that. So before we started Operation Bloody Fjords in 2016, with the first main crews going out in 2017, there was only about four or five images of, you know, dead actual dolphins, Atlantic white-sided dolphins, in the media at all, because they hardly even made it into the Faroese press because they knew how bad that looked. But now, because of our campaign, there's hundreds of photographs and video and drone footage of dolphin hunts and a bottlenose dolphin hunt, and of course all the pilot whale hunts. So up to this point, Operation Bloody Fjords has been a investigation documentation exercise.
Do the Faroese argue that this is part of their tradition? Is that something that they're holding on to, I guess?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you could argue that the Grindadrap hunt, as it once was part of their tradition. I mean, they have, extensive records going back centuries about the pilot whale hunts on the Faroe Islands. But it's not unique to them. These hunts happened all around the North Atlantic and Scandinavia, in Scotland, in the Scottish Islands. The last similar hunts of its type happened in Shetland. I think the last one was in 1920 or 1921, where the last pod of pilot whales was killed, and they just sat there on the beach rotting because the people realized they didn't need to do it anymore. So the Faroes are over 100 years behind the last place to give up these hunts. But the Grindadrap hunts, as they are now, bear no resemblance to any kind of traditional hunts. I mean, at least you could argue before that the pilot whales and dolphins stood half a chance at escaping because the Faroes were chasing them basically in rowing boats. But now they're using, modern fast boats, ribs, sports fishing boats, jet skis. They can use sonar. It's so easy to track the pods. The pods have almost no chance to escape these days. There's nothing traditional left about this hunt.
Yeah. And do they allow kids to participate in the grins?
Well, they don't allow kids to participate in the grind. You can get a license to kill pilot whales from the age of 16. So you can go and do a 45-minute PowerPoint presentation with no practical experience or teaching at all, and just stand in a queue and get your photograph taken and get a license to kill pilot whales. I mean, it's shambolic, it's ridiculous. But Faroese children, although they can't participate in the grins, are taken even as babies to go watch these hunts, which is astonishing enough to many other foreigners. But what we have found in the campaign, even worse, if you like, is that Faroese kids who are in school, who are meant to be in school lessons, will be taken out by their teachers to go and watch dolphins being massacred in their local bay. Which, isn't even like the parents' decision. That's almost like a state decision. So you have a situation there where the grins and the barbaric nature of the hunt is very much normalized for these children. And it's kind of unsurprising that, you have 14, 15-year-old Faroese boys looking forward to taking part in their first hunt because it's what everyone around them has been encouraging them to do.
Yeah. So, Rob, I wanted to ask you about the history of Operation Bloody Fjords. You already mentioned, I think, that it started in 2016. And what did it, I guess, what was the initial intention with Operation Bloody Fjords, and what were some of the strategies that you all used when it started way back when?
Well, Operation Bloody Fjords came about because we had the big Sea Shepherd campaigns in 2014, 2015. But because of that, Sea Shepherd Global had a lot of legal issues. They didn't attend court hearings. And so they said they weren't going back at all. So I was leader of Sea Shepherd UK, as we were called back then. And I said to them, well, we'll take over this campaign. And there was obviously some resistance from some people, but we did it anyway. We started off, we just called it a pilot whale defense campaign, and Operation Bloody Fjords, the name came about during the 2016 campaign, which was entirely covert. So we sent a cameraman and a videographer and an editor out to the islands. And they were kind of like a main crew staying there for a long time getting footage. But 2016 was quite an eventful year. And the first real year of sending sort of bit much larger crews was 2017. And we actually carried out the whole 2017 campaign covertly and announced it almost as we came to an end, saying, we've got all this footage. The Faroes had no idea that we had multiple crews on the island in 2017. And in fact, even our crews who were on the islands in 2017 weren't aware of the other crew. It was
Wow.
that covert, or where they were staying or who they were. And they got some amazing, high quality footage of around the Faroe Islands, all the aspects of, the Grin Bays and everything else, and of course some of the hunts themselves, even getting into, closed off buildings where butchering was taking place of dolphins. So we broke that news in 2017 as a series of crew testimonies with attached photographs and video. And that was kind of like the real birth of Operation Bloody Fjords as it was. So in the next few years, we're sending a mixture of covert and, more open, more overt crews, which was quite an interesting dynamic as well, because some of the Faroese were making it their business to try and identify who we were. And we would let them identify some of our crew and not others, so you could then film some of the interactions. But the main mission of Bloody Fjords was to really saturate the world's sort of media with as many photographs and videos as possible, and specifically to really expose the killing of the Atlantic white-sided dolphins and other species than pilot whales as well, because that's something that we knew would really hurt the Faroese and the press, and it did. So when you had the larger sort of dolphin hunts, that's something that caught the media's attention, because many of the media outlets knew about the pilot whale hunt, and the Faroese thought they were fairly safe with that. They attach that to this tradition that goes back hundreds and hundreds of years. But the killing of the dolphin species is much more modern phenomenon, and one they wanted to hide. One thing they never wanted was for, foreigners and their children to find out that the Faroese were basically killing flipper.
Right.
He had that attachment just to the word dolphin. And that's another thing that we've been trying to tackle as well, is, that sort of almost like a stigma that the pilot whale has of not looking like that traditional sort of smiling dolphin that kids remember from, dolphinariums and dolphin shows and programs on television. They've never had that charismatic sort of attachment. And we've been trying to address that for the sake of the pilot whales as well. But it's been a very, very long campaign. I mean, when we had crew on the islands, sometimes we had crews on the islands for 6 months of the year, right through the main months that grins take place. And while we didn't get every single grin, I mean, we filmed 55 pilot whale hunts during the course of Operation Bloody Fjords over the previous 8 years. Four dolphin hunts, four mixed hunts, and an extremely rare bottlenose dolphin hunt, where 100 bottlenose dolphins were killed, which equals the Faroese record. So, the other thing about the Grindadráp is, this isn't really a diminishing activity in the Faroe Islands, because they're so efficient at it, using modern boats and everything else. And of course, communication around the islands is better as well. What's that? What chance do the pilot whales and the dolphins have these days? The largest hunt ever, a single hunt in a day of cetaceans, so include whales and dolphins in that, was in the Faroe Islands on the 12th of September, 2021, where 1,428 Atlantic white-sided dolphins were killed in a single bay in a single day. I mean,
Wow.
that statistic is horrifying. They killed so many dolphins in that hunt that what they'd usually do is butcher them for some of the meat and distribute it around the islands, which they did. They had to distribute it around the entire Faroe Islands. But they had so much waste and leftovers and blubber that they couldn't do what they usually do, which is tow it out to sea or dump it off of cliffs, because they would have had, partial dolphin corpses washing up on Faroese beaches for months to go. So they had to send them to a local incinerator, to try and get rid of them.
Wow.
And the bottlenose dolphin hunts, that equaled a hunt, I think it was in the 1870s. So it's the joint largest hunt of bottlenose dolphins in history. Things have not been getting better in the Faroe Islands for a long time. And so, part of the campaign as we enter our ninth year is to change our entire style of campaigning. We've completed the documentation. We've documented every aspect of the hunt, from the finding of the pods to the butchering to the dumping of the carcasses, where the meat goes, how much is actually eaten, you know, how contaminated it is all known facts. But now we need to really sort of pile on the pressure, because the Faroese government isn't listening. The media are not paying so much attention because they get tired of the same kind of news. So, you know, we need this campaign to develop. So here we are, just about to enter the ninth year of Operation Bloody Fjords, but with a very different strategy coming.
Okay, so that was something I was going to ask you. You mentioned that the previous Operation Bloody Fjords was primarily focused on documentation, getting the word out there, exposing what they're actually doing, the dolphins and the other cetaceans that they're killing. So going forward then, and I know you know maybe you can't reveal all of this to us, but how is this strategy going to change, and how are you going to pivot from what you were doing in previous years?
Well, you know, we after 8 years on this campaign, all of us want to move on to a different strategy. All our veteran crew from all these years want to. You know, we all agree that the documentation stage of this campaign is done. Yeah, every aspect of the hunt, we have footage of it, we have photographs of it, we have, you know, excellent drone footage. So we don't need to keep doing that anymore. What we need to do now is make the international, you know, the whole world listen and find out about what's going on. So we have the footage, we have everything we need. What we now have is a documentary, which is almost completed, that will be released this summer, which will shine a lot of light on this, and potentially a second documentary after that as well. We are working with a brilliant creative agency here in the UK called Don't Cry Wolf. And we are going to be bringing the Grindadrap right to the door of the Faroese and companies who have associations with the Faroe Islands. And we're going to be targeting their two main industries. Number one is fisheries, and number two is tourism. You know, last year, when CPWF sent the John Paul de Joria, a cruise ship that came into Tórshavn, the capital, you know, the people on that cruise ship witnessed a grind taking place. And that actually created quite a media storm in itself. And so the cruise ship companies need to be very careful about where they need to be sailing, I would suggest. But they should expect that from us. We have previously written to the cruise ship companies explaining about the Grindadrap. And if they want to continue sailing there, then they should at the very least educate and warn all of their passengers about what they may see on the Faroe Islands, because it is highly irresponsible and unethical to not warn their passengers and their children or anyone else who may be on board that they may see dolphins and pilot whales being killed whilst they visit the Faroe Islands. But that's not the only industry, you know, that there is many facets to the new campaign, and it's going to be extremely high publicity, you know, with associated stunts and everything else. Of course, we're going to be sending crew to the Faroe Islands once again, and we will document hunts if they happen. But we have some extra tricks this year, and we are looking to find ways to certainly reduce the hunts as much as we possible, reduce the number of deaths, but also have just a generally a much, much bigger impact on the Grins, and especially the Faroese government, because it's about time they paid some more attention to what the rest of the world thinks about these hunts, you know.
That's a great point.
I mentioned it to you before on another podcast, but you know, even if the Faroese and the Faroese government see this as a traditional, you know, cultural, almost cultural hunt for them, it shouldn't even be taking place, because The blubber and the meat of the pilot whales and dolphins is so heavily contaminated that it shouldn't be being eaten by anyone. The Faroese governments are complicit in the poisoning of not only their own people, but also any tourists who come to the islands and think they're sampling local delicacy or anything else. They know that pilot whale meat and blubber is heavily contaminated, and there's no warnings whatsoever to foreigners, to tourists. And it's like a government sanctioning the sale of contaminated meat
Yeah.
in our countries. It just wouldn't happen.
No, and I wanted to ask you too, taking it another layer up, would the Danish government have anything to say about this, or do they let the Faroes govern themselves? Because in Denmark, my understanding is you can't just go out and start killing cetaceans. So why would they allow the
Well, I mean, the reason
Faroese?
why you're asking that, of course, is because the Faroe Islands are still part of the Kingdom of Denmark. But the Danish politicians literally bury their heads in the sand over this issue. They don't want to hear about it. They don't want to discuss it. And one of the reasons, really, is that the Faroes are kind of split, half and half on whether they should be fully independent from Denmark or not. And there are, potentially oil reserves and other things in Faroese waters. Denmark wants to maintain their strongest links possible, the Faroe Islands strategically as well. It's heavily used by the Danish Navy. So they have a vested interest, and the way they're showing it in regards to the Grindadrap is by maintaining as much silence as possible, which actually makes it quite ridiculous when you consider that to stop activists on the islands, they are quite happy to send the Danish Navy and even the Danish police and all their assets and extra vehicles on ferries over to the Faroe Islands to stop any activists from intervening against the hunts, which is in effect using Danish taxpayers' money. So the taxpayers who would be prosecuted for even harassing a dolphin in Danish waters, they are subsidizing their own armed forces and police to go over to the Faroe Islands and stop activists who want to end a hunt which would be illegal in Denmark itself. I mean, it's just the most ridiculous situation, and Danish taxpayers ought to be outraged that happens.
Yeah, and I would think that if there was more publicity in Denmark about all this going on, that maybe the Danish people could put more pressure on their government to, well, not spend taxpayer money on allowing the slaughter of these innocent creatures. But I guess, time will tell if, as we, get the word out more, if people really care about what's going on in the Faroe Islands.
Well, the Danish media themselves find this a very difficult topic. We had a DRTV, a Danish TV crew, out with us in Iceland in 2018, and they did a really good sort of 40-minute program, which then got sold on to other networks as well. So it was seen quite widely, and they followed our campaign. It was Operation Mjolnir in 2018 in Iceland. And actually discussed with them about getting Operation Bloody Fjords on Danish TV, and they're like, "Well, yeah, I mean, we'd like to tackle this issue, but when we mention it to our editorial board or the people who are in control, they just say no." I think there are Danish investigative journalists and videographers who would like to expose this, but there are people higher up who aren't allowing that to happen. But that said, the documentary, which we've very almost completed now, we've actually produced that in a way that we're hoping it'll be a watchable film, both for Danes and even Faroese, certainly for Scandinavians generally, or anyone who might have an interest in the Grindadrap, whether it be supporting it or otherwise. And hopefully they'll watch our documentary, which is incredibly truthful, very factual, and hopefully make a more informed judgment about the Grind, even if they would support it on the basis that the Faroes really fight this issue, saying this is our tradition and our culture. But the hunt makes no sense. You know, it makes no sense from the contamination issue. It certainly breaks even Faroese animal welfare legislation from the 1980s when it comes to animal cruelty. But the Faroese have got around that because they created their own grind laws, laws specific to the pilot whale hunts themselves, which seem to circumvent a lot of the other legislation. So exposing that to Faroese who may not be as well educated on this subject, but certainly to a Danish audience, we hope will help. But in the meantime, what we need is the international media to get some, you know, to take this subject back on again, to make sure the last time the world's media really paid any huge attention to the grind was the massive dolphin slaughter, the 1,428 that were killed in 2021. And much like with the Taiji hunts in Japan, you know, the media can't keep repeating the same story again and again and again because they know their readers just don't keep up with the subject. So they need something different to happen. So that's what we plan to do this year, is giving them many different things, you know, that will captivate, capture the attention of their audiences and hopefully inspire change, not only from the outside world, because this can't only come from the international audience, but even the people in the Faroe Islands, because people in the Faroe Islands, you know, we have met people who do not approve of the Grindadrap hunts. They just don't dare speak out because there's almost like a taboo on the Faroe Islands. You can't speak out against the dolphin hunt at all. And if you do, you are potentially shunned by your neighbors, possibly even your family. Mm. We've had stories of people who have criticized the hunt in the Faroese media before, who are then not served in their local shops, so they can't buy any food. You know, it's crazy, crazy situation, but it is quite typical of these sort of small islands when it comes to these kind of local issues, where, you know, generally there's seems to be a government position of, you know, this is our identity, and therefore, you know, it cannot be criticized at all.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to ask you too, when a grind is occurring and activists are on the beach trying to document or just observing, are the Faroese people themselves aggressive if they see someone, let's say, with a camera that is trying, or someone that maybe is getting in the water and actually, you know, trying to protect a pilot whale from getting a sword in its back?
Well, I mean, if you go back to the last couple of years when activists have been in the water trying to prevent a hunt from happening, obviously then the Faroese generally, the grind foremen themselves, the people regulating that hunt, and the police step in very fast, and they'll be extremely rough, you know, dragging people away, handcuffing them. Mm. You know, we saw all that in previous campaigns. And they made it illegal to even be there in the Faroe Islands, or send the ship to the Faroe Islands if your intent is to prevent a hunt from happening. So you stand a very good chance of being arrested, although in reality you're probably most likely to just be deported and not let back into the country for a couple of years, or may receive a fine. But, you know, after all the years of documentation, with it being out in the world's media, the Faroese government aren't listening. There's not enough of a resistance movement growing in the Faroe Islands. There's a few very brave Faroe Islanders who do speak out on the issue, but there are very few. And they are threatened by other people as well. You know, so to get this back in the news, to get it to be an international topic, to get us in the position where we have the ability to affect the Faroese fisheries industry, and their tourism industry to pile that pressure on the Faroese government to curtail and hopefully end the hunts entirely. We need to, you know, do things that get this back, you know, into the international media and get the attention that this hunt deserves, because it really does. You know, that more dolphins are killed in the Faroe Islands than they are in Taiji in Japan. If you ask general people on the streets, you know, who have heard of dolphin hunts, it'll be Taiji in Japan that they've heard of because of, you know, successful documentaries like The Cove, for instance, and reporting on it. And the Faroes Grindadrap has missed a lot of the news outlets entirely. And other ones have always been very worried about reporting on the Faroes Grindadrap because it's so, well, it's graphic, it's horrifically brutal. Because that's what it is. Now, even some of our more mild, if we put it that way, images and videos, some of our mainstream media just won't touch it. You know, big news agencies, you know, the BBC, Guardian, and other people like that, occasionally publish an article with a few images, but they won't touch it. The tabloids are a little better, but the entire nature of the hunts, you know, the brutal killing on the beaches, the suffering that is shown in the videos, well, and in the photos, is so bad that you know, we struggle to get some of that footage even on, you know, online media sites, even the likes of YouTube. You know,
right.
We get threatened with our channel being taken down just by putting up some of the footage. So we have images and video that are so horrific that it's almost unwatchable. But, you know, we have a new strategy around that. We want to get the Grindadrap known throughout the world. And it's a case of watch this space, really, when it comes to this campaign, because As a campaign year, it's, you know, we're really excited about this. The guys at Don't Cry Wolf are just brilliant as well. And we've done a lot of work behind the scenes when it comes to surveying people who know about the Faroe Islands, who have traveled there as tourists. We've researched a lot of their industries. So we know what we want to target this year, and we're really going to go for it as well.
Well, I can tell by speaking with you and other members of the CPWF UK team that this particular operation is something that you all are very passionate about. I mean, you have years of experience behind you trying to make changes in the Faroe Islands. And like I said, it's not just you, it's other people that work for CPWF UK that, you know, this is something that they really want to see change happen. I wanted to ask you, I wanted to ask if there were any other organizations that are also trying to put pressure on the Faroese people. When you're down there doing your thing, are you alone? Are you on an island basically by yourself, you know, up against the Faroese people, or are there others that are also trying to initiate change there?
Well, since the two sort of really big Sea Shepherd campaigns in 2014, 2015, where ships were sent, well, that was until the Faroese government banned any activist vessels from entering their waters. You know, ever since then, you know, it's only been our UK charity that has been running a campaign out there year on year, you know. There are some other conservation groups, including here in the UK, that do have pages on their websites about the Grins, you know, but they've never sent teams there. They've never sent crews there. And, you know, and last year we had a situation, of course, where at the end of May, we changed the name of our charity from Sea Shepherd UK to Captain Paul Watson Foundation UK. And following that, we had Sea Shepherd Global, who had never really been interested in this campaign, sent a crew, a very small crew, just three people, out to the islands and filmed, I think, one or two hunts. But they are intending to go back this year, but they are, again, from what we've seen and what they're publicising, they're going down their documentation route, and it's just not the route we're taking anymore. You know, we've already completed that as a task. It's time to move on. What I would say is that I you know, us and our crews are rather in dismay at the moment at the way that our campaign, Operation Bloody Fjords, is being almost claimed by some people in the Sea Shepherd movement, both by people in Sea Shepherd Global, and just this evening, in fact, by Sea Shepherd Conservation Society, who did a live broadcast but actually used some of our footage from last year, which is, I find, insulting and quite, you know, it's certainly deceptive for supporters. You know, Sea Shepherd UK, as we were, Captain Paul Watson Foundation UK now, you know, we have solely funded and managed this campaign since 2016 with, you know, no help from Sea Shepherd Global or anyone else. So for them to portray now that they have been out there all this time, and suddenly now it was just a Sea Shepherd campaign. Well, we didn't get any financial help or serious help from them at all these years, but now they want to say, oh, but it was done under our banner, you know, which it wasn't, because our charity has always been independence. We never were part of Sea Shepherd Global or had any legal attachment to any other Sea Shepherd group around the world. We're actually much older than Sea Shepherd Global. Our UK charity was founded in 2005, and of course Global didn't come about till the end of 2013 into 2014 when it was probably launched. But that is one of the challenges we face. But, you know, we've got a new campaign. We will certainly be getting a huge amount of publicity from our campaign, and there may be a Sea Shepherd Global crew or whoever it is on the islands. Good luck to them in some respects, but they need to be aware that we'll be on the islands in significant numbers as well. So, you know, will we meet? I'm sure we will.
Yeah.
What will happen? Well, you know, we can't go into the actual strategies of our campaign, but I'm sure you'll be able to see what happens both on our social media channels and maybe Sea Shepherd Global's, because they'll have to film our crew as well, I guess, if they're at the same grins.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's...
I mean, that said, though, I mean, you know, what I will say is that we do want more organisations on this topic. It's not that we don't want more people out there. But, you know, fair's fair, Charlie. You know, our campaigns and all the effort we put into that, and most importantly, all the effort of our crew and what they've had to go through, you know, it's not that they've been... filming these hunts from, like, you know, from a cliff top from like half a mile away with big lenses. Our crew have been on the beaches, standing in the water of blood. One of our crew was so close that the ferries tried handing him a rope so he could help pull in a dead pull in a pilot whale to be slaughtered. You know, they've seen them being butchered. Our crew have had to go back to their accommodation covered in blood, stinking of dead pilot whales and dolphins, having witnessed what they witnessed, you know, having to clean themselves up and then prepare all the footage and send it to us. And it's just we just find it so disrespectful, especially to our crew, that, you know, an organization that showed little to no interest in our campaign is now sort of almost trying to make out that it was them all along that was there.
Yeah.
And Operation Bloody Fjords just would not have happened had it not been for, you know, our UK team and our UK crew staying on this campaign year on, year out.
Well, and I think that's a really important point is, you know, certainly folks can support whatever organization they want to, but if they do want to support an organization that is ramping up the pressure, and an organization that is actively trying to do something to make tremendous change in the Faroe Islands, at least they know where CPWF UK stands. And they know, Rob, that you and your team have put in the effort and the energy and quite frankly, gone through quite a bit of trauma having to witness all of those previous grins. You all have built it up to this crescendo.
They do need to recognize the fact that, you know, some of our crew have been there at hunts and have not crewed again because of what they've had to witness. So to then go and use their footage or, you know, their testimonies or anything else, it is something that I find quite unbelievable. You know, if they do want to use them, then they could ask us permission. And I'm certainly not against other organizations being there. And I'm not saying to anyone, if you want to follow Sea Shepherd Global or SSES, USA's campaigns in the Faroe Islands, then please do. As I'd encourage any other conservation groups to get involved on this issue. But, you know, don't claim that you've been there when you haven't, or claim someone else's footage because somebody went through hell to get it in the first place.
Great point. That's very well said. And hopefully going forward, you know, they can be professional about it. And to your point, hopefully other organizations will join in the push to put pressure on the Faroese people to change their ways.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And if there are people from other organizations actually listening to this who do want to get involved in the campaign, then please do reach out to us. You know, all our contact details are on our website, neptunespirates.uk. So reach out to us. And if you want to join us on the islands or want to get involved in this year's campaign to help boost the publicity around the world, if you're a media agency, journalist or anyone else who wants to get involved, then get in contact with us because, you know, there's always one of the difficulties with getting media involved in the campaign, you know, the Faroe Islands campaign against the Grindadrap is it's not like the campaign in Iceland that we run against the commercial fin whale hunt by Christian Lofsson. Because when the whaling happens in Iceland, you know that the two ships, Kvalar 8 and Kvalar 9, work on an alternate basis, and one leaves about 18 hours after the other one, and they work on a rota. And if you send out a media team, a film crew out to Iceland, you're guaranteed that a whaling ship will come in at least once every 48 hours or so, you know, usually on a 36, 38 hour cycle. And they will get to film dead whales being brought in. And one of the challenges we've always faced in the last 8 years is getting media agencies involved and to send out people to film professionally, because they say to us in conversations, well, when do we need to go to film a hunt? And we just say, well, we don't, because these hunts are done on an ad hoc opportunist basis. You know, what, 1 week there may be multiple hunts, and then for 2 months there may be nothing. And we can't guarantee you'll see a hunt. But what we can say to people now who are in the media industry or anything else that may be able to help in this campaign is that if you can't send a crew out with us, we have 8 years worth of footage and photographs, which you can use as a backup. So if you can, please do send a film crew out to join our crew in the Faroe Islands. But if you don't get that hunt, you know, we'll do interviews, we'll give you all the material you need, we'll give you the video footage, the photographs, you'll still have a story.
Yeah.
So, you know, definitely do reach out to us and get involved if you can.
Yeah. And Rob, I wanted to ask too, for folks that are listening to this that want to help and want to make a change, what can the average person do that isn't involved in any of these organizations? They're not in the media.
Well, you can, of course, do the more traditional actions of writing to your members of parliament or politicians, you know, making them aware that dolphins and pilot whales are being killed in the Faroe Islands. And of course, you know, you have the Faroese fisheries industry, which is something that specifically everyone can boycott, you know, both from checking the labels. If you do eat fish, check the labels and see where that fish comes from. If it generically labels it North Atlantic, then actually ask the manager of the store where that fish is actually coming from. Because one thing we've noticed is that some fish that used to be labeled as coming from the Faroe Islands is now generically under like a North Atlantic kind of label, because they don't want anyone boycotting it, because boycotts have been attempted before, standard boycotts have been attempted before. But also, very simply, you know, if you haven't booked travel to the Faroe Islands, please don't. Please don't go to the Faroe Islands. Don't encourage their tourism industry. The Grindadrap itself is not the case as you get with other hunts around the world, where you have, you know, a specific group of people who are employed as hunters. This is a big community activity. It is supported by the vast majority of Faroe Islanders. So if you travel to the Faroe Islands and put money into their economy and pay for accommodation or anything else, you're supporting a country which the vast majority of the people are, you know, also supportive of this hunt. And in fact, the majority of accommodation in the Faroe Islands is, you know, standard sort of Airbnb style properties, you know, on websites like that. People have often actually sent us in photographs, and our crew have found it before, where there's pilot whale meat and dolphin meat still in freezers in the rented accommodation. Some of it years old, by the way, because, you know, one of the things with this hunt is that, you know, even if you take the Faroese government's own statistics about what the Faroe Islanders claim they're eating when it comes to this contaminated pilot whale and dolphin meat, it's barely a third of the quantity that is actually killed, you know, by weight of meat and blubber. So that means two thirds is wasted. You know, even if you're a Faroe Islander who supports the hunt and says it's a sustainable activity, well, yeah, even if the hunt doesn't severely impact the pilot whale population or the population of Atlantic white-sided dolphins, which, by the way, they can't say it doesn't, because there isn't any reliable surveys into the population of either species. But even if they claim it's sustainable, what it isn't, even from a pro-hunter's point of view, is sort of ethical in terms that they're killing three times as many animals as even they claim they're eating. But, you know, the majority of it is actually thrown in freezers. You know, every single bag has a date on it and a location, you know, where the hunt took place. You can trace every single bag of meat. But, you know, after 4 or 5 years, we hear this all the time, and we've seen it. You know, that's just dumped in the bin to make space for new meat coming in. It's just crazy. You know, they're wiping out these species, entire pods, entire family groups, you know, totally indiscriminately, to just have the meat and the blubber sat in freezers and two thirds of it get thrown in the bin years later just to make space for more. It's just the most insane hunt. And like you say, you know, many of us in the UK are especially passionate about fighting back against the Grindadrap, because it is quite a local issue for us as well. I mean, these are the same pilot whales and dolphins that swim past our shores as well. And, you know, it's to know that, you know, that number of animals is killed for what is basically just a sport these days, in such a tiny nation as well. I mean, yeah, if it was any bigger nation, they'd probably wipe out the species in a matter of a couple of years. So thankfully, no one else does take part in these hunts. But
yeah, well, Rob, I think I can tell that you are enthusiastic about what could potentially transpire this year and some of these new strategies that you talked about. So, you know, as you know, I have a tendency, as we have these conversations, to feel the weight of all the dolphins and pilot whales and whales in general that are being killed out there. Right. It becomes sort of cumbersome to talk about this all the time, but I am,
it's a difficult issue. Because, you know, one of the arguments that I see from time to time is that, you know, people say, oh, but The biggest killer of whales and dolphins is industrial fishing and ship strikes or anything else. And yes, absolutely, it probably is. Many times more than the number of whales and that are harpooned or dolphins that are killed with knives and spinal lances in Japan and the Faroe Islands. But what people have got to remember is that these hunts, like the Gwynedrach, are the deliberate killing of these cetaceans, which already face all the risks that the pods face from industrial fishing and ship strikes and pollution in the ocean, which is why their meat is so contaminated. They already face all those risks. What they don't need is people deliberately going out and killing them needlessly.
Yeah.
And the same situation, you have exactly the same situation with the fin whaling in Iceland as well. The meat generally has little to no value at all, and it's in the case of Christian Lofsen, it's almost like a hobby to him. And in the same in similarity, if you like, it is it's got this sort of cultural hobby identity to the Faroes as well. And the grind is not something that the Faroes should be proud of and want to keep doing. It should be something they want to end if they want to. One of the things the Faroes are proud of is their sort of music culture and football. They are incredibly passionate about football as well. They should focus on those things, and not take any kind of joy in the killing of dolphins or whales. And they need to understand that there is going to be an impact on, their reputation, their economy, and everything else from this activity. And just the rest of the world is not going to stand for it any longer. We certainly are done with just documenting it.
Good.
Now's the time to really pile the pressure on and bring an end to this hunt, which is one of the hardest to end because it's so ingrained in their society. But I'm hopeful and end the Gwynedrach, at least in this generation.
You know what, Rob? I think in speaking with you and speaking with your team members, I'm very optimistic that your team will be able to accomplish this goal. I mean, you have very talented people that you work with, and you yourself are extremely passionate about this. And it's a very heavy issue. It's very hard to watch the videos. It's very depressing to see what these people are doing and how they're desensitizing their own children to the murder of these sentient beings. However, there is a ray of light, and I think CPWF UK is shining that light, and the enthusiasm that you have, especially with partnering with Don't Cry Wolf. I'm really excited to catch up with you later on this year as this unfolds, and hopefully talk about progress. Hopefully talk about the incremental aspects of change that are hopefully going to happen in the Faroe Islands.
Well, I hope that both the Danes and the Faroese will see our campaign and what we're doing and just realize that the Gwynedrach has no future. It does them no good at all. Now is the time to think about ending it. And we're quite happy to engage with people from Faroe Islands, Denmark, or anyone else on this issue. But I do know that there is a, albeit slowly, but there is a growing, resentment in the Faroe Islands to the grind and the reputational damage that it is already doing to those islands. And as the tourism industry in particular grows in the Faroe Islands, and they put a lot of effort into the Faroese tourism industry, then more people have a vested interest in the Faroe Islands about ending these hunts than continuing them. So you're right, there is a glimmer of light at the end of this extremely dark chapter in Faroese history. And I think that one of the signs of that, especially, is if you go into the like the National Museum in the Faroe Islands, there's hardly anything on the grind. But if they defend it so vehemently, in politics and against activists, how come it doesn't feature in their own national sort of museum? There's a cabinet with some whaling knives in it and a quick mention of the grind. And apart from that, just move on, look at something else.
Yeah, that's a good point. If you're
It's
so proud of
embarrassing.
it, if you're proud of
Yeah, if
it,
you're
then
so
why aren't
proud of it, why isn't there a museum dedicated to
right?
it? Well, it's for a very good reason. They don't want tourists reading about it when they're there regretting it and then writing reviews about what they found out when they visited the Faroe Islands.
Yeah.
Because that does happen. Tourists get caught up witnessing grins. They have no idea what's going on. And we've seen this happen. We've talked to people. We've even got video and testimony from tourists before who have seen lots of people rushing to a beach and thought, oh, what's going on here? And gone to have a look, only to be sort of, have their car blocked in by hundreds of ferries, people rushing to the scene to then butcher dolphins in front of their terrified family in their car. They had no idea that this was going to happen because it just didn't get told about it by their tourism agents or anyone else, so we have leverage we can apply to the fairies, and we fully intend to do that as well.
That's great. Well, Rob, I'll leave you at that. I am again, I'm optimistic about what the Captain Paul Watson Foundation UK team can do this year in the Faroes, and I'm sure we'll be talking soon, hopefully, about positive changes that are occurring because of your actions.
Well, I certainly hope so, because it's it's a long issue for us, and we'd very much like to, just as Paul does, we'd like to see an end to all whale and dolphin hunts. Hopefully in our lifetime.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Rob, for joining me today. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Charlie. It's a pleasure.
All right. Bye.
Okay, bye.
Want to thank Rob for joining me today. It is always a pleasure speaking with him. Hopefully, he and his team are very successful this year with Operation Bloody Fjords. I'm encouraged and optimistic that some of these new tactics that Rob alluded to will help prevent more pilot whales and dolphins from being killed in the Faroes. So we'll have to see how all that plays out. And certainly I will check back in with Rob and his team as they go out there in the Faroe Islands and try to make some significant change. The Captain Paul Watson Foundation is also gearing up to confront Christian Lofsen so that he can't kill any fin whales this year. I heard recently that either Christian Lofsen or someone connected to him has applied to get a permit to also kill minke whales. I don't know if he's going to get that permit, but whatever happens, we will certainly report back to everybody and let them know what the outcome is. Hopefully, they don't get a permit to kill minke whales, but we will see. It seems like Lofsen is getting a little desperate and trying to figure out new ways to kill whales. And Captain Watson, on the other hand, is gearing up to ensure that no harpoons get into the backs of any whales. So if you'd like to learn more about that and how you can help, you can go to paulwatsonfoundation.org, and there you can learn about how you can volunteer or potentially donate or just, read up about the issue. If you would like to know more about the things that the Captain Paul Watson UK team is doing, you can go to neptunespirates.uk. They have some great information on their website as well. So either way, please feel free to visit. And if you can help, we would love your help. It's going to take all of us collectively putting pressure on Iceland and the Faroes to prevent them from killing more whales and dolphins. Lastly, I wanted to mention that this episode is brought to you by Laganor Hyensis acutus. Thanks so much, everybody.
If the oceans die, we die.